You're listening to today's edition of All Together Now, live from Accra. I'm Tom Rowe, and Republican candidate for Congressional District 19, Bob Bishop, is supposed to be here at 6:15-ish, and he'll tell us why he's dropping out of the race for that congressional district to replace Chris Gibson. We'll also hear about the Ravina Koyman Selkirk Middle School cook-off tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Stay tuned for All Together Now.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Tuesday, May 10, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. Katie Kosajemski is reporting in the Daily Mail that four construction firms are under consideration for the proposed Greene County Jail project. The firms that applied to manage construction of the new county lockup are BBL Construction Services of Albany, Turner Construction Company of New York City, Gilbane Building Company of Providence, Rhode Island, and the Pike Company of Clifton Park in Saratoga County. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said interviews with representatives of the four firms are scheduled for next week. Groden said the plan is to have the project out for bid by January 2017. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. John Mason is reporting in the Register Star that Columbia County's Emergency Management Services has been named EMS Agency of the Year for 2015. The county EMS system includes the Greenport, Valencia, Northern Dutchess, and Community Rescue Squads. According to officials, the cooperative has responded to more than 12,000 standby assignments and more than 2,000 911 calls since it was established. Columbia County EMS has reduced response time by an average of almost 7 minutes per call. Before the new system was created, the county had 10 individual ambulance agencies, all operating independently. The county EMS brought them together to ensure all areas of the county are covered at all times. You can read that full story in the Register Star. William J. Kimball is reporting in the Daily Freeman that public input sessions will be held this week on a corridor management plan for State Route 9G from County Route 78 to the State Route 199 traffic light. According to a representative of the Poughkeepsie Dutchess County Transportation Council, there are two primary goals for the workshops. One is to educate the public and the other to obtain feedback. Elements of the plan include prohibiting a right-on-red turn at the intersection of Route 9G and Kelly Road, evaluating a possible speed limit reduction near Bud's Corner Road, adding a pedestrian bicycle sidewalk or trail between Bard College and Montgomery Place, and developing a trail through the Tivoli Bay's Wildlife Management Area to connect Bard with the village of Tivoli. The sessions will be held at noon on Wednesday, May the 11th, in the multipurpose room of the Bertelsmann Campus Center at Bard College at 6:30 Thursday, May the 12th, and at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, May the 12th, at Tivoli Village Hall. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. Matthew Hamilton is reporting at Capitol Confidential that state lawmakers are being pressed to develop and pass legislation before the end of the session requiring lead and copper water testing at the tap in New York schools and, if necessary, remediation of contamination. No formal legislation proposals exist yet, but advocates, including those from the New York League of Conservation Voters and the New York Public Interest Research Group, say they are in talks with lawmakers and the governor's office. The goal of the legislation enacting a five-point action plan is not just to test for contamination, but also to make testing consistent statewide. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Katie Kosajansky is reporting in the Greene County News that harsher penalties could soon be imposed on convicted animal abusers in New York if a new amendment to Buster's Law is passed into law. Kirby and Quigley's law would make the killing of a pet during the commission of a crime a felony. The measure is named for two family pets shot and killed during a burglary in Florida, Montgomery County, in February. State Senator George Armador, a sponsor of the legislation, said the enhanced penalty would, and I quote, serve as a deterrent to make criminals think twice before executing an animal or face additional jail time, end quote. If found guilty, a person could be sentenced to 2 years in state prison and be subject to a $5,000 fine. The measure was passed by the Republican-controlled state Senate for the third time in March. Republican Jim Tedesco is the sponsor of the Kirby Quigley's law in the Democrat-controlled state assembly. According to Tedesco, the assembly majority will not even consider the bill. You can read that full story in the Greene County News. The Daily Freeman is reporting that the 6th annual Senior Citizens Day will be held at historic Catskill Point on Friday, May the 20th. The event is sponsored by the Greene County Department of Human Services. Department representatives will offer information about services available for residents over the age of 60, and local organizations and businesses will have information about services of interest to older citizens. The event will take place between noon and 3 p.m. Parking will be at Dutchman's Landing. Shuttles will be available. And for our final story, Rick Carlin is reporting in the Times Union that lawyer Pete Henner from New Scotland has filed suit in state Supreme Court in Albany County to halt the review of bids in the Cuomo administration's $500 million program to expand broadband access across the state. Henner alleges the guidelines used by Empire State Development to award the competitive bids were based on unreasonable grounds and without proper consideration. The broadband initiative is promoted as an effort to expand the number of New Yorkers who get broadband service. The state will provide grants to entities that bring broadband to those who are underserved or not served. Henner and other critics are concerned the program could allow bidders to skip areas or regions that are remote and costly to reach. Henner wrote, and I quote, "Millions of New Yorkers do not have access to a reasonable internet connection, which is synonymous with access to broadband. Those New Yorkers are severely disadvantaged," end quote. Henner also mentioned in court papers several residents within the greater capital region currently without broadband, which complicates their ability to operate businesses. Judith Elliott Brown of Greenville works with computer-aided design files, but is hindered by the slowness of her satellite internet link. She lives less than a mile from a line operated by Mid-Hudson Cable. Another company, 4750 Realty, has manufacturing space in Durham, but they were told that getting high-speed internet there would require a $15,000 installation fee and a five-year, $9,000 per year commitment. You can read that full story in the Times Union.
This is Tamara with the weather for Wednesday, May 11th. Overnight, there's a low around 41 predicted. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 74 and a low around 48. Friday, showers are likely with thunderstorms also possible after 1 p.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a high near 64 and a low around 49 Friday night.
WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. You can go to newsroom.wgxc.org to find these stories and more.
Matthew Hamilton in Capital Confidential reports that Delaware County Republican Bob Bishop ended his campaign to replace Representative Chris Gibson in the 19th Congressional District and threw his support to John Faso. Andrew Haney is also running in the Republican primary, and Will Yandick and Zephyr Teachout are running in the Democratic primary. Bishop said in a statement, and I quote, "The time has come for the Republican Party to unite behind our strongest candidate if we are going to reclaim our country for our next generation. Part of being a leader is recognizing when another individual is the best person suited for the position. John Faso has shown us that he has what it takes to best represent our interests. Not only does John have the endorsement of four parties critical to winning in November, he also possesses the skills and passion needed to win the race. It is time for all Republicans and conservatives to unite behind John Faso in order to continue Congressman Gibson's strong legacy while making sure this seat does not fall into the hands of a radical liberal like Zephyr Teachout," end quote. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential. Alicia Briggs is reporting in the Albany Times-Union that Hudson, New York, has a higher concentration of artists than every other county in the United States except Brooklyn and Taos County, New Mexico, according to a study released 2 years ago by the Regional Alliance for the Creative Economy. Altogether, creative jobs such as design, media, visual arts, and handcrafted products, performing arts, and heritage and preservation made up 3.7% of workers, or 23,936 jobs in the capital region, the study said. In Columbia County, creative jobs made up 6.5% of the workers. You can read that full story in the Albany Times-Union. Assemblyman Pete Lopez is hosting an education forum next week in Cobleskill and May 18th in Saugerties. The event at 6 p.m. May 18th in Saugerties High School auditorium will include Dr. Peg Luxick. Dr. Luxick has more than 35 years of experience in special education and elementary education, and she has taught at every level from preschool to college. Lopez said, and I quote, "She has extensive experience in both traditional classrooms and alternative educational settings. Dr. Luxick has also worked for the U.S. Department of Education and is uniquely qualified to discuss these issues," end quote. For our final story, Patricia Doxey reports in the Daily Freeman that 17 buildings owned or leased by Ulster County tested positive for elevated levels of lead in the water. Ulster County Health Commissioner Dr. Carol Smith on May the 9th issued an advisory warning to all county employees not to use the tap water in many Ulster County buildings. Smith said, and I quote, "A memo was going out that directs individuals to drink water only from the filtration fountains or the water stations that we have and not to use the tap water or make soup or coffee or tea or anything else," end quote. County Executive Michael Hine said they tested the water because of the ongoing water story in Flint, Michigan. He said, and I quote, "We proactively tested, we got the results, and we immediately acted." You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman.
This has been the WGXC News Update. Please visit newsroom.wgxc.org to find these news stories, weather, public meetings, and more.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News.
Time we're live in Accra, where I'm all by myself right now. So we're going to hear an interview with Dan Regan from the Art of the Hudson Valley last Thursday. Hudson resident Dan Regan is a photographer, writer, actor, announcer, voiceover artist, director, columnist, and public speaker, an on-air radio and television broadcast veteran of more than 35 years. He's the author of the popular From the Road column, and now called Regions Road. Chad Werkler talked to him on May 5th on WGXC.
Catskill, Columbia counties, Greene counties, and that's locally on 90.7 FM, but you can, and maybe you are listening globally on WGXC.org. This is the Art of the Hudson Valley. I'm your host, Chad Weckler. We're on the first Thursday of every month, so here we are. It's May 5th, 2016. And my single guest today, I'm very happy to have Dan Regan, who's a local artist, Renaissance man. Many talents that he possesses. And Dan, I was looking at your on your website of the many things that you are. But over the years that I've known you, I would give you the title of storyteller. And because you're always a great storyteller, yeah. Whether it's in a written form or a photographic form or your voice.
Well, I actually had someone several years ago said that one of the things about you is you're a great storyteller. And part of it, all the years in broadcasting, but when I became an actor in New York, I found that one of the most important things you can be is a good storyteller. Because you have to deliver the play. You have to deliver the life of a character, and you have to do that by telling a good story, you know. And so I used to tell stories to my grandmother when I was a little boy, so maybe that's where it started. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is when does the storytelling begin for you?
Always, I think. I was always, when I was a little kid, I couldn't wait to get outside in the morning. I'd get up. I lived in a little farm town in Illinois, and we lived on the last street north in town. And there was always like a cornfield or some kind of field directly across the street. And I'd get up, that was just before I went to school. I'd be 3 years old. I'd take off and run across the street, jump the fence, and I'd run all day in the field and play. And I'd make up stories because I was an only child. There weren't many kids in the neighborhood. And so you just lived and you ran, and I made stuff up. I remember once, every time I go back to Illinois, I first thing I do is I find a cornfield if the corn's up, and I walk out into the cornfield because you disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once I had seen Fantasia, and a few days later I was out running through a cornfield, and the corn, as it gets later in the season, the roots start showing, the dirt comes away, and it looks like toes. And I was sitting there looking at them, and I had this image like the hippos in Fantasia. They're all, what if the corn just all of a sudden jumped up and ran away? It didn't, but I imagined it. And so I developed this great imagination from just being alone, I guess, and playing.
You know, when I look at local cornfields, I can't imagine running through a cornfield because they're so closely grown, but
well, they are now, actually. They never used to be quite as close. There's something about, I asked one of my cousins a few years ago when I was back. She and her parents had a farm, and I would work on the farm during the summer. And I asked Judy about it, and she said that there's some new, they produce it, they grow it, the rows closer, and each stalk is closer, and they yield only a couple of ears, but they can get so many more that it actually is a larger yield or something. So it is a little hard, but what I did learn when I was young, roll your sleeves down and run, put your arms up in front of your face when you run through the cornfield. Otherwise, the leaves will cut you to pieces. you'll have look like razor blades have been, you know, you've been running through razor blades on your arms if you're not careful.
What were your parents doing at the time?
My father worked in a foundry, this is a town of about 1,800 people, but they had like three factories in town or something. Mm. And he worked in a foundry. And my mother occasionally worked and sometimes was just a stay-at-home mom. And she, you know, cleaned house and did all those things. So, and sometimes she would work.
And you've mentioned your grandmother.
Yeah.
What's special about your grandmother?
My grandmother was an extraordinary human being. I was lucky. You know, sometimes you get lucky in life by the people that are around you and who you meet. And I was lucky real early because my grandmother was this extraordinary woman. She was absolutely the strongest person that I've ever known, man or woman, by far. And yet she would go, "Hi, yoo-hoo, hello, how are you today?" And she looked like a complete pushover.
Mm.
And she had this will of iron and yet was kind and never harmed people, never talked bad about people. She was this just wonderful inspiration about being a good human being. And she became my best friend very young. And so I spent a lot of time with her. She was, I have a book that one of these days I'll finish that's, I've got about 300 pages done, and it's probably a 600-page book is about her. She was born in a covered wagon during one of the runs on the Cherokee Strip in Oklahoma. And her father was Irish and her mother was Cherokee. And her mother died a few days later from complications of childbirth. And she was, her father adopted her. That's kind of what you did then, I guess. Mm-hmm. And a family in the Ozarks from Missouri adopted her, and then they moved to Illinois. And she didn't learn any of this until she was, except that she knew she was adopted, but that, and was born in Oklahoma, and that's all she knew until she was in her 70s. And she learned all this. But she wound up, she got married at one point in her 20s, and the Depression came along. And her husband, who had been in World War I and had been injured, wound up one day just leaving. Mm. And it turned out he wound up going up to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and stayed in a VA hospital for the rest of his life. But she never heard from him, had no idea where he went or anything, didn't know. And here she was with two daughters, and she had, in the middle of the height of the Depression in this little farm town, and she had to just do it. She had to, and she did, and she was proud. She refused to go on relief, they called it then, and she was proud. She worked in a little coffee shop grocery place for a while, and then she met a man and wound up, he said, I've got a house that I need taken care of. He had a small trucking company, and you need your daughters taken care of. Why don't you live with me? Mm. And she wouldn't marry him because she was still married and didn't know where to find the guy. And there was bigamy was a big thing then. And so she lived with him and had two sons with him and took in washings and cleaned houses. And finally one day, and he was pretty abusive, and one day she just had saved enough money and left. But she said, you do what you have to do to get by. And she said when she worked, she told me one day, I remember she was talking about working at this little coffee shop. And she said, Dan, she said, there were days when I would steal a potato or a small container of milk because my girls had to eat. And she, tears running down her face. And she's in her 70s at this time. And she said, but it had to be done. She said, I tried not to be bad. I tried to do the best I could. But she was just, she always told me, she told, I think I mentioned earlier, it was, she gave me a wonderful piece of advice once. I went to her one day, and I said, Grandma, I'm worried. And she said, Dan, what's the matter? What are you worried about? I said, I'm worried that I won't live long enough to do all the things that I want to do. I'm afraid I'll die before I get to do everything. And she said, looked at me, and just kind of stared at me for a minute, and she said, well, you better get busy.
And
I did.
And you did get busy. And you, it sounds like you grew up in a great atmosphere, but what pushed you out, and what direction did you want to go in? You know, you were a young man, and you wanted to hit the world running.
I always wanted to be an actor or a director. Me and my friends, when we were kids, we'd go out, and they were building houses around, so there'd be all these dirt piles, and we'd go, and they'd run up, and we'd shoot each other, you know, and you'd roll down the hill doing, like, stunt work or something, but I would direct them. We'd do scenes for movies. We went to see Bridge on the River Kwai, me and some friends. I convinced them to march home whistling the Bridge on the River Kwai song.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that thing. And they did it. I don't know how I got them to do it, but I did. So I guess I was supposed to be a director. But I did all these things. I thought I wanted to work in the film business and do something, and I got into high school, and I did this program where you worked half a day and went to school half a day for my junior and senior year. And then they had extra classes that you could take. This one teacher who set this up, it was called Diversified Occupations. And he was actually an extraordinary man. He was one of the three people actually that I've known who made it across Omaha Beach on D-Day. And he was just very quiet man, but did enormously good things for people. And one day I had done this. I was an auto mechanic for the 2 years and an auto partsman. And wound up actually, because he also taught, you could take classes on the weekend with him. And I took physics and other stuff, you know, and architectural drawing. I wound up with like 12 more credits than I needed to graduate. And we were walking in the hall in the high school one day, and he said, so Dan, what are you going to do after you graduate? I said, well, Mr. Graff, to tell you the truth, I don't think I want to be an auto mechanic. And he said, really, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be an actor. And he said, you can't do that here. And to me, that said, I can't do that. 10 years later, I was sitting in a radio station in Cincinnati, and I went, you can't do that here. It means you have to go someplace else.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I quit my job, and I moved to New York to be an actor. So it just happens sometimes. That was about 10 or 12 years later. But I wound up, I had a Steven Spielberg movie experience. I was working in the Ford garage in town, this little town called Sandwich, Illinois. And all the guys had gone on coffee break, and I was in the back where there was a wash rack where they washed and cleaned the cars, and there was also a machine to pull tires off of rims. Mm. And it was a big overhead door up in the front, and everybody had turned their lights off above their benches, so it was dark in there. And I see some guy come walking through the glare of this wide open, this door that was open, bright light. And he came in carrying a briefcase and wearing a sport coat. And nobody here wears a suit. Who's this guy? And so I ignored him, and I'm pulling this tire off. And it was a 15-inch tire, and somebody put on a 16-inch rim. So I was having a little trouble. And he walked up to me, and he asked me if I was who I was. And I said, yeah. And he said, how'd you like to be in radio? And I looked at that tire, and I looked him in the eye, and I said, you bet. And it turned out that one of the teachers I'd had in high school had seen an ad for some broadcast school that was opening in Chicago. And she sent my name in and never told me. And the guy had come, he was a salesman, he'd come to find me. And so I wound up, he came and sat with me and my folks, and we talked about it. And what he told me in the conversation, he found out that I wanted to be an actor. And so he said, well, what you need to do is go to we have a school that just opened in New York. In New York City, he said, because there's an acting school that works in conjunction with this. It's a complete lie. Did not exist. And so I went to New York when I was 17 and got on a train from this little town of 2,000 people in Illinois and rode to Illinois. Because I took the train because I thought planes crashed. I didn't know. I'd never been on an airplane. Walked out from Grand Central and looked up and, wow, where's King Kong? It was a real learning experience. Going to New York when you're 17 from a little farm town.
And did you have a place to stay, or did you just come with a couple pieces of luggage and say?
Yeah, I had two pieces of luggage, and they had a hotel, a Prince George Hotel on 28th Street, about between 5th and Madison. And they had a roommate.
Radio news about radio waves.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines.
Gizmodo pulls back the curtain on the supposedly neutral computer-based algorithm of trending news on Facebook, which turns out to be none of those things. The site interviewed several former contract workers for Facebook who were curators chosen to pick which stories Facebook trending news, who said they were told to increase the profile of certain stories and to ignore others that were popular among users. Quote, in other words, Facebook's news section operates like a traditional newsroom, reflecting the biases of its workers and the institutional imperatives of the corporation. Imposing human editorial values onto the list of topics an algorithm spits out is by no means a bad thing, but it is in stark contrast to the company's claims that the trending module simply lists, quote, topics that have recently become popular on Facebook, unquote. Gizmodo wrote, the story's allegations that conservative news was played down by Facebook seem less impressive. One anonymous former Facebook news curator says, quote, I'd come on shift and I'd discover that CPAC or Mitt Romney or Glenn Beck or popular conservative topics wouldn't be trending because either the curator didn't recognize the news topic or it was like they had a bias against Ted Cruz, unquote. That sounds like a problem in most any newsroom, not particular to Facebook. Another quote says, quote, every once in a while, a red state or conservative news source would have a story, but we would have to go and find the same story from a more neutral outlet that wasn't as biased, unquote. Did they follow the same procedure for first sources from the far left? Probably the curators searched for more sources and sources they knew and could trust, just like regular journalists. Facebook's news curation may have a bias against conservative news and tend towards mainstream sources and stories, just like many other news outlets, and that part of the story seems very accurate. See the full story in Gizmodo.
Next, we have these reports.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. Honeywell has locked out 340 workers at its South Bend, Indiana plant rather than allowed them to continue to work while labor contract talks continue. UAW Local 9 President Adam Stevenson says the union was open to negotiating with Honeywell the whole time talks were going on, but when the workers rejected the latest Honeywell contract proposal, the company locked them out. The union is citing at least two issues in the company proposal they don't like: changes to their health care and the use of outside contractors. Honeywell claims its offer was competitive and comprehensive, but nothing but the company's own decision keeps it from allowing the union workers to keep working while they continue to talk with them about a new contract. Honeywell is trying to lock the workers out and keep the plant operating. The Chicago Teachers Union says it has a $502 million Chicago Public Schools revenue recovery package that Mayor Rahm Emanuel and the Chicago City Council should implement. CTU's Jackson Potter.
They've painted a picture where either teachers suffer draconian cuts in classrooms, see their budget slashed, or Springfield comes to the rescue. And there's no other alternative besides those two pathways to the following school year. And what we've contended in our revenue package, our recovery package, is there are, in fact, alternatives that they are misrepresenting reality. In the meantime, children shouldn't suffer. Chicago Public Schools shouldn't be handed over to private interests.
CTU and the district have been in negotiations for over a year on a new labor contract for teachers. The Chicago Teachers Union says the problems city public schools are facing revolve around the failure of leadership, the consistent, troubling disregard of community parent and educator voice, and the lack of equitable funding for Chicago schools. The United Food and Commercial Workers Union says it's had its 100th organizing win in 2016. UFCW President Mark Perrone says that a national conversation about wealth inequality is occurring in packing houses and on the floors of retail stores all over the country. He says UFCW has 100 examples of how those conversations are moving workers to form a union and take action. Perrone says workers are realizing that partnering with an established union can help secure the wages and benefits that put them on a path to a better life. The UFCW says workers in 26 out of 50 states have already joined this year, and over 50% of UFCW locals have had successful organizing drives.
Brought to you by the IBEW, 750,000 men and women powering the way for an American comeback. Information on how to become an International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Power Professional is online at ibew.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. It's no surprise that climate change will affect wildlife in the future, but a new study shows birds are already feeling the heat. In the U.S., they're moving north to cooler breeding grounds, and changing weather patterns are forcing them to move in other directions too, especially west. Brooke Bateman of the University of Wisconsin analyzed the breeding habits of nearly 300 species using data gathered by citizen scientists over the last 60 years.
These birds have adapted over thousands of years to breed in specific conditions, and if the climate conditions have moved 60, 100 miles away and it's become not suitable where they normally go, that's going to be a problem.
That's because the plants and insects birds depend on may not move as quickly as the birds themselves. So how can we help? Bateman's study shows that many of the regions that are increasingly suitable for birds are also full of urban development. So she says strategic land planning can connect different protected areas as stepping stones for our feathered friends. And anyone can contribute as a citizen scientist by sharing observations from their own backyards. As we learn more, we can help birds adapt to climate change. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Here's Pete Levinson talking to the students at the Ravina Koyman Selkirk Middle School about their cook-off May 11th.
Okay, this is Mr. Peter Pete, and we're back here again. Today I am so happy to have in a bunch of guests that are working on and will explain to us about the Capital Region Eat Smart New York program. We have a lot of, we have four students here from the Ravina Koyman Selkirk Middle School, and we're going to start out with them. If you want to start introducing yourself, and so you can start out if you could. Renee?
Hi, I'm Renee.
And you're from this area, I take it? You live in?
Ravina.
Ravina, okay. And?
Hi, I'm Maria. I live in Ravina, too.
Okay.
I'm Jacob. I live in Ravina.
Okay. And
I'm Nicole. I live in Ravina.
Nice to meet you guys. And also we have a couple of ladies here that are with the Ravina Koyman Middle School as well as the Cornell Cooperative Extension. And if you want to introduce yourselves.
Sure. I'm Tammy. I'm from Cornell Cooperative Extension Eat Smart New York.
Okay.
I'm Sarah. I'm from Capital Region Eat Smart New York with Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Okay.
And I'm Molly Jenis. I'm their Family Consumer Science teacher at Ravina.
Okay. Now, you guys have an after-school nutrition education series that is offered by the Capital Region Eat Smart New York program. What are you putting on? You guys are having a cook-off of sorts coming up tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You want to give us a little information on that?
Well, sure. So, thank you. The kids have been working for the last, 5 or 6 weeks, every week doing some cooking classes together. And tomorrow is the end of our cooking club, but we're going to finish it off with a cooking contest and see whoever can make the best dish.
And the team consists of 6th, 7th, and 8th graders?
Correct.
Okay, and who is going to be choosing the winning dish? As it were.
So we have some teachers who will be judging the dishes tomorrow. So okay. It's going to be really exciting.
Do we have one of the teachers here? Are you going to be one of the judges?
Of course I will be.
All right. And that was Molly. And I want to talk to some of the, to Renee or Maria or Jacob or Nicole. What are some of the dishes that you guys like to cook and or what do you enjoy to eat?
I enjoy to eat ziti and any, like, really Italian food.
Okay, so you're more Italian-oriented type of dish.
Yes.
And what about you?
Well, Maria? I like to eat, like, Italian kind of dishes, and I like to make pasta and spaghetti and stuff.
Is that the type of dish you're going to be making?
I believe we're making rice bowls.
Rice bowls, okay, yeah. Okay. Jacob, what about you? What do you got coming at us?
I like to make hamburgers.
Perfect. So I'm a hamburger guy, too. Every Saturday. Nicole, how about you?
I like my mom's chili.
Oh, she makes a special dish of chili, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so does my mother. She's got her special recipe that's always good in the house. Now, I think the importance of this is when I did some research on the Capital Region Eat Smart, I think it's very important for people to know that the benefits of the productivity that when kids, if they miss out, on their meals, proper meals, good meals coming in. It can affect them in such a way that they can become distracted more easily. Their grades can suffer. They're more likely to miss class. And, there's millions of children still in the U.S. of A. that start their school days on empty stomachs, and I think that's such a sad state of events. But I think it's such a great thing that you guys offer with the students. Giving them that opportunity to appreciate it and also learn how to create their dishes and enjoy it as an activity and just, to kind of go with it for, presumably for the rest of their lives, having that ability or that skill at that point. What do you guys, what does, it consist of when you guys go in to this? What do you guys do? What would you say is a regular day when you guys go to a when you guys go into doing this? What do you do?
Well, we start out with we go over the recipe, and then we'll just get into cooking.
When you do the recipe, is it something that you pick out, or is it already put there for you?
It's already put there for us.
Right, and you'll spend a lot of time then preparing it?
Yes, we go over the recipe, make sure we have everything for it, and then we get with our groups, and then we start with it. It usually takes an hour or so.
Really? Mm-hmm. We were talking about some of the activities that they had to do, and Jacob was saying that he had two bags of potatoes you had to peel.
I had four.
Oh, you had four. How long did that take you?
An hour and a half.
An hour and a half. Holy moly. So tell us some more about the association with Cornell and what you guys are trying to achieve.
Sure. So Capital Region Eats Smart New York program is a regional initiative, and we serve 11 counties in the greater Capital Region. Mm-hmm. We are funded through the USDA Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Or SNAP Ed, and we are a nutrition education and obesity prevention program for families or individuals receiving or eligible to receive SNAP benefits. And so some of the messages we teach are eating more fruits and vegetables, drinking less sugar-sweetened beverages, and exercising more, and balancing calories eaten as part of a healthy lifestyle.
Right. I mean, even when you discuss that, there is a high rate of depression in younger kids or high school students, and many American students in particular eat a high diet of trans fats from processed foods, and it shows that high trans fats can lead for depression if you're not, you went through eating the vegetables and the fruits, and there are sugars in that, but it's natural sugars, and the glucose, all the sugars and everything can affect especially young bodies that are, growing in such a way that it can cause depression, and all that can be alleviated, a lot of it can be at least by the diet that they consume.
Oh, sure, absolutely. What you eat definitely affects how you feel. And for the record, no one should eat trans fats.
yes, agreed.
But absolutely. I mean, if you think of your body as a car, you wouldn't put bad gas in your car, so why would you put bad food in your body,
Right.
The national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service daily newscast for Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. I'm Mary Sherman. Today's news features a variety of stories, including North Carolina's bathroom bill battle approaches a breaking point, the door set to close for public opinion on a grisly delisting, and is the pursuit for peace and quiet possible in an extrovert society? An expert weighs in. We begin our news in North Carolina, where the state is going toe-to-toe with the federal government over HB 2, the controversial law passed in March.
On Monday, the federal government filed a lawsuit against the state, saying it's violating the Civil Rights Act, Title IX, and the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. HB 2 mandates that individuals use public restrooms and changing rooms for the gender they were born, and prohibits cities or counties from making their own laws. In response, the state is countersuing the U.S. Justice Department and Attorney General Loretta Lynch. Durham attorney T. Greg Doucette represents several clients he says are being affected by the new law.
It's been a disaster for the state and from every standpoint, whether it's my business clients losing money from folks not coming to the state, or our constitutional clients who end up getting arrested because they want to go protest. It's just been a disaster from start to finish.
Governor Pat McCrory has appeared on political talk shows in recent days, touting HB 2 as a common-sense bodily privacy law. But Ducey predicts North Carolina taxpayers will be on the hook for thousands or even millions of dollars as the state defends the law. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
North Carolina's law has drawn the ire of celebrities, businesses, and others who have threatened to boycott the state. It's primary day for Republicans in Nebraska and both Republicans and Democrats in West Virginia. Polling in West Virginia shows Bernie Sanders edging Hillary Clinton 45% to 37%. And prior to Ted Cruz and John Kasich leaving the GOP race last week, Donald Trump had a strong lead in the state on the Republican side. Almost a year after New York State began cracking down on nail salons that don't pay fair wages, those efforts are paying off. We go to reporter Andrea Sears for this story.
Since last May, the Nail Salon Industry Task Force has opened more than 450 investigations. Today, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that 143 of those salons have been directed to give employees some $2 million in unpaid wages and damages. Luna Rajid is director of Adhikar, an organization that's been advocating for the workers. She calls the announcement a sign of real progress.
The workers are learning about their rights and speaking up, and it's an exciting time. It will take time for this to be implemented across the industry, but it's a good start.
Salons are now required to post a salon worker's bill of rights and to provide adequate ventilation and safety equipment for employees.
As states around the nation try to address the growing problems of prescription drug and heroin abuse, North Dakota leaders are raising awareness with a Stop Overdose campaign. According to the CDC, the number of overdose deaths in North Dakota jumped from 20 in 2013 to 43 just 1 year later. Behavioral Health Division Director Pamela Sagnis says the bulk of medications that are abused come from an often unsuspecting family member or friend.
We want to look at limiting access to prescription drugs that are unneeded or unused. In North Dakota, we have take-back programs that are located across the state in law enforcement centers, but also that work has been expanded to include pharmacies.
In other health-related news, the number of kids under six poisoned by nicotine in e-cigarettes rose by nearly 1,500% between 2013 and 2015. And one child died, according to an analysis of calls to the National Poison Data System. More than 90% of the children swallowed the nicotine-laced liquid known as e-juice that is smoked inside e-cigarettes. Nearly half of the children exposed were under the age of two. The status of a bear species is up for debate, as today is the last day for the public to weigh in on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service plans to remove the Yellowstone grizzly from the endangered species list.
So far, more than 3,300 responses have poured in online. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the grizzly has recovered enough within the national park to be delisted. However, Glenn Hockett with the Montana-based Gallatin Wildlife Association says the recovery is too fragile. His group opposes the move.
What's the hurry? Why are we saying we just can only have 700 bears in the greater Yellowstone and we're going to maintain that as an isolated population? That just seems way premature. It's too small a bar.
Comments are being taken just until end of day today online at regulations.gov. Meanwhile, the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission is already discussing how to set up a planned hunt in Montana as part of the Tri-State Bear Hunting Regulation Framework. It's on the agenda at its public meeting this Thursday in Helena. I'm Suzanne Potter.
We live in a loud society, but a West Virginia author says more people need to see the power in being an introvert.
Davidson Elkins College psychology professor Lori Helgo says we live in a culture that rewards people for being outgoing, but the minds of introverts and extroverts just work differently, and one is not inherently better than the other. Helgo says people who prefer to be quiet, thoughtful, and reflective are often unintentionally undervalued.
Even introverts learn to adopt an idea of introversion that's stripped of its richness. And it's a subtle but a powerful difference when you just start stating who you are rather than apologizing for who you are.
Helgo spoke about the topic during the National Association of Social Workers West Virginia Chapter Spring Conference, the largest event of its kind in the country. Dan Hyman reporting.
And I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Tamara with the weather for Wednesday, May 11th. Overnight, there's a low around 41 predicted. Thursday should be sunny with a high near 74 and a low around 48. Friday, showers are likely, with thunderstorms also possible after 1 p.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy with a high near 64 and a low around 49 Friday night.
Altogether Now listens for feedback from the public. Anyone who wants to leave a public comment can call 518-291-9492 and leave an audio message up to 3 minutes with any sort of opinion about something you heard on Altogether Now. You can also send emails to info@wgxc.org with opinions about what you hear here.
This is Timmer with the community calendar for WGXC. Go to WGXC.org and you can add events to the community calendar. Just click on the Add an Event button at the top of the community calendar page at WGXC.org. Copy and paste the information about your community event in the boxes, and soon folks like me will read your event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it at WGXC.org. Wednesday, there's an American Red Cross blood drive at the Hunter Tennersville School from 1 to 6 p.m. Catskill has a public hearing in front of its Zoning Board of Appeals about subdivision of lands owned by Columbia Memorial Hospital in Jefferson Heights. That's at 6 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall. Catskill also has a village meeting at 7 p.m. at the Washington Irving Senior Center. Claremont has a public hearing in front of its planning board at 7:30 p.m.
Next, it's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Song of the Day comes from Mira and Radio Mind. Mira and Jerkov Bishkov are playing at the BSP Lounge Tuesday, May 10th. Here's Mira with Radio Mind.
And